Strange News Daily is a production of iHeartMedia.
In a world full of bizarre events, unsolved mysteries, and a billion stories from all corners of the globe, some news gets lost in the shuffle. This is your gateway to the stories on the fringe of the mainstream map. These are your dispatches in the dark. I'm Ben Bolin, and this is the Strange News Daily. Our first story today, as many countries, including the United States, continue to struggle with the opioid epidemic, scientists are hard at work to discover new alternatives to the usual painkillers, substances that can be just as effective without the potential for crippling addiction. And according to the Institute for Molecular Bioscience, tarantulas may be our answer. Specifically, their venom. Even more specifically, a mini protein within the venom. Dr. Christina Schroeder notes that the world desperately needs an alternative to fentanyl and oxycodone, stating, "Although opioids are effective in producing pain relief, they come with unwanted side effects like nausea, constipation, and the risk of addiction, placing a huge burden on society." Dr. Schroeder's study found that a mini protein in tarantula venom from the Chinese bird spider known as Huantoxin 4 binds to the pain receptors in the body. Dr. Schroeder's team used a three-prong approach in designing their drug, one that incorporates this mini protein, its receptor, and the surrounding membrane from the spider venom, enabling the team to, among other things, target specific pain receptors. In layman's terms, this makes sure that the perfect amount of the mini protein attaches to the correct pain receptor, as well as to the membrane surrounding the receptors. Current testing has shown that this drug works efficiently in mice, and Dr. Schroeder is hopeful that further development could lead to an alternative method of treating pain without the side effects and reduce many individuals' reliance on opioids for pain relief. This is a massive issue. Approximately 2.1 million people in the U.S. alone have an opioid use disorder. Our second story today takes us to the U.S., where locations across the country are using drones to enforce social distancing policies. In New Jersey, Connecticut, as well as other regions, local authorities see this as an innovative way to keep people from gathering unsafely. And they say this strategy is also safer for their police officers. Let's look at Elizabeth City in New Jersey as an example. They've been on lockdown since March 21st due to COVID. Recently, Chris Bulwidge, mayor of Elizabeth City, told residents that 5 speaker-equipped drones will help the police to manage the lockdown. Elizabeth is one of the hardest-hit towns in New Jersey, with more than 1,200 confirmed coronavirus cases. The flying machines will blurt out an automated message telling folks to stop gathering together outside and return home. Anyone who ignores this message could be fined up to $1,000. Under the current state rules of New Jersey, people are only allowed outside for essential business and exercise. Now, this trend is not exclusive to the United States. Areas in China, France, Spain, and the United Kingdom have also deployed drones. In the UK, the police drones don't broadcast pre-recorded messages. Instead, they capture video footage from the air and use it to shame people for being outdoors. Reactions to these innovations have been mixed. Over in Elizabeth City, New Jersey, numerous residents raised privacy concerns with the police. In the UK, a civil liberties group called Big Brother Watch described the drone-shaming tactic as both sinister and counterproductive. Other people seem supportive. In at least one case, someone proactively deployed their own drone. Just a few days before Elizabeth City's new drones hit the streets, a speaker drone appeared in nearby New York City, relaying messages about the importance of social distancing. At this point, no one knows where this drone came from. The New York police don't know. The Federal Aviation Administration said it's also clueless, but is investigating this mysterious vigilante drone. Our third story for today. New technology may allow paralyzed limbs to feel once more. How often do we think of our own sense of touch? The warmth of the sand on your feet at a vacation on the beach, the feel of your pet's fur under your hand, that irreplaceable first experience touching something too hot, like a stove. We often take our sense of touch for granted, but for people who have suffered spinal cord injuries, there are about 288,000 of them in the U.S., losing their sense of touch can have an enormous impact on how they interact with the world around them. New research in the field of brain-computer interfaces could make this devastating loss of sensation a reversible condition. A team of researchers from the Battelle Memorial Institute in Columbus, Ohio, have found a way to amplify small, imperceptible touch sensations in a patient by implanting a computer chip into the patient's brain and relaying neural signals from the brain to a computer. This computer chip not only restores motion to paralyzed limbs, but it will restore a sense of touch as well. Compared to random chance, the researchers say they achieved 90% accuracy in touch trials. This improved motion and touch sensing allows patients to regain autonomy and ownership over their paralyzed limbs and more easily control them while completing tasks in their everyday lives. Now, neither motion nor sense-restoring technology are entirely new, it's true, but the study's lead author, Patrick Ganser, explains what makes this breakthrough so unique. Ganser says there's been a lot of this work done in artificial limbs for amputees, so robotic limbs. With these robotic limbs, you want to move digits or fingers. However, feeding touchback is tricky here. Other groups are using similar brain-computer interfaces, this approach to restore movement control and touch, but they're doing this by stimulating the brain directly. The novel part that we're addressing is the participant is not using a robotic limb, but he's using his own hand, which is really challenging. The researchers are testing these concepts on Ian Burkhart, a 28-year-old spinal cord injury patient who suffered the loss of feeling and movement in his right arm following a car accident 10 years ago. The team collected neural signals from an implant on Burkhart's brain, then used intelligent algorithms to break down the stream of data into movement and sensory information. This second stream of information was key, according to the authors, because earlier studies had believed that patients like Burkhart were simply no longer generating sensory signals at all. This new study, however, found that these touch-based neural signals were still present, just at much, much lower levels, such that a patient like Burkhart was unable to feel them. To help make these ghost-like touch signals more perceptible, the team's algorithm also boosted their signal. Finally, the computer relayed the processed data back to Burkhart and through stimulation to forearm electrodes, that helps with the movement, and to vibrations on a haptic armband for the feeling of touch. When having Burkhart complete movement tasks blindfolded, like grabbing an object, the researchers found that the addition of these stimuli allowed him to do so far better than just chance, with a detection rate as high as 90%. Currently, the team's main goal is to make the system portable, to move this technology from the lab to the home. That's all for now. We've been asking you to chime in with suggestions for stories you think your fellow listeners should know about, your bad dad jokes, or your personal experience with COVID-19. Reach out and let us know on Twitter by tagging #StrangeDaily. Our first reply comes from Ollie K over on Twitter, who says, "Due to the quarantine, I'll only be telling inside jokes." Ollie, I cannot emphasize how much that terrible, terrible joke has made my day. Our second response comes from Maria with an update on the Swedish moose migration live feed. The moose, it seems, have arrived. Maria also has included a link for anyone who wants to pop over and check the arrival of the moose, which starts at about 12 minutes and 56 seconds in. Thanks so much for writing. And everyone else, feel free to share as many bad jokes as you like. You can hashtag StrangeDaily, as we said. You can also find me directly at BenBullenHSW on Twitter or at BenBullen on Instagram. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Dylan Fagan, our research associate, Sam Teagarden, and thanks to you. I'm Ben Bolin. We'll see you tomorrow. And until then, stay strange.